Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff. I have on the other side of the table from me, Mr. Brian Hawkins. This is the No Look Pass, and this is our Thanksgiving edition. It's the day before Thanksgiving. What are you looking forward to for Thanksgiving there, Brian?
Lots of good football games, hearty meal, interaction with family, not necessarily in that order, and no snow.
I hear you on that one. Yeah, it's always, I love Thanksgiving just because, well, being a Cowboys fan, I always know I'm guaranteed at least one Cowboys game that I will be able to know is on, you know, regular TV, not having to be forced to watch Bears games, or, you know, sometimes they blackout specific games. So this is my one guaranteed game a year that I know I'm at least going to have a Thanksgiving game. I also enjoy the great amount of food that my mom ends up always making every year. She doesn't really know portion size very well, so it ends up being, instead of for seven of us, it ends up being for maybe 30 people, so we have leftovers for probably a week and a half or so.
And that's how it should be.
And so, yeah, there's lots of turkey sandwiches and rolls and cranberry sauce and sweet potatoes and other potatoes and just lots of desserts, too. So I am making myself hungry talking about it, so why don't we just get into some sports?
Okay.
Let's start with them Bears. It's getting ugly there, man. Yeah. What are you thinking about the Bears? Unfortunately, we had a relatively healthy team coming into this week's past week's game. Not so much anymore. We lost a couple players. So why don't you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, Miller. What is he? He's out for the season. He's
Zach
an IR,
Miller, yeah.
Broken foot.
Yep.
And then Josh Sitton has an ankle, and I don't know if he's out for the season or not, but. And then Cutler, he's sort of there. He's up in the air because he's got a shoulder. So
yep.
We could see Matt Barkley, who start this week, the next time the Bears take the field.
Okay.
Against, who are they playing next? The Titans.
Correct.
And that was a game that looked like he'd think they could win, but I don't know.
Yeah, and they also lost their rookie this year on the defensive side of the ball. He ended up getting hurt also. So, I don't know. Is he out for the rest of the season?
Oh, Leonard Pope.
Yeah.
I don't think so. He, after, you know, it looked pretty bad because they brought the card out and they attached him to a board and they put him on the card and drove him out. But he went to the hospital and then they released him.
Okay.
So, I don't know if he's playing this week, but I don't think it's... he's going to be out very long.
Okay. Well, that's good. And then we're still dealing with the suspension to Alshon. It'll be a couple more weeks before he's back. So this Bears team is going to be a bit rough to watch over these next few weeks. Hopefully they can pull out a few more wins, maybe disrupt some playoff hopes for some people in the you know, the teams in their division. Maybe they can spoil the Packers' fun. They still have one more game with them, and they have another game with the Lions and Vikings. So they still have some opportunity to be able to ruin some playoff hopes for the teams in their division. We'll see if they have enough to do so. I think the Packers, this is a team that's really seeming to be very one-sided. Their offense is clicking for the most part, and their defense is pretty much non-existent. They're giving up a lot of points, and when you don't have a defense to stop a team at the end of the game, you're probably going to lose more than you're going to win, and that's what's happening with the Packers at the moment. So I think the Bears, even though how bad they are, they can still possibly sneak a game away from someone in their division. This Titans team coming up... you know, they have DeMarco Murray, a pretty decent running game. And Mariota is in his second year, and he's seeming to look he's looking really well in his sophomore year. They were saying something over the weekend that he has 30 touchdowns. When they get in the red zone, he has 30 touchdowns and two interceptions since he's joined the Titans last year. That's pretty good for a young player to not turn over the ball when you're in the red zone having 30 touchdowns already from your quarterback. That's impressive.
Yeah, and last week the Titans lost
to the Colts.
So they're going to be hungry. They want to get back on the winning side of the ball.
Yep.
But the only other thing, good news for the Bears, is that they get Kyle Fuller back. And also, they could be in a situation now, because of their record being what it is, that they could be in the hunt for a high draft pick.
Yep, we'll see what they will do with that. It definitely is never a bad thing to have a high draft pick. I wonder, do you have an idea of what they're going to be shooting for, since they'll have that high draft pick?
No, I just read that Ryan has been scouting quarterbacks, obviously, and obviously other players. But no, there isn't any great quarterback coming out this year. So I don't know. Hopefully they get a good player.
So I did read something that this is probably a season-ending injury for Jay Cutler. If it is, that probably means it's his last football game he's played as a Bear. What do you basically think about when you think of Cutler as a Bear? Do you have any fond memories? Is it mainly, you know, face to palm or palm to face? Most of the time, what do you think about when you hear Jay Cutler as a Bear?
I'm just puzzled. I mean, he obviously has, you know, above average talent, but he never really maximized it. You know, I don't know. I guess maybe he was enamored with it and he felt that he didn't have to take it to an extreme level like a Tom Brady would or Peyton Manning. But I just don't get it. I mean, if you're that close and you see that you have talent, especially if you've had so many failings, why you wouldn't go the extra mile to try and improve yourself to the point where you're an elite quarterback, especially, you know, you look at other teams in the division, well, or even just the Green Bay Packers. You look at the quarterback for them. What's his name again?
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah. You look at him and you think, wow, that guy is great. They come and beat us every year. You would think that that would push someone, you know, if they had any ambition. But I guess that's the thing that some people say he's lacked, is the ambition to be that great quarterback. But he, you know, has all the tools. He can throw and make all the throws. He can escape pass rushes and so on and so forth. But he just did not, I guess, go push himself to that extra level.
Yeah, I think for me, I think about it in those first few years, I was feeling very frustrated watching the Bears. And I am a Bears fan. You know, if they're playing the Cowboys, then I'm going to root for the Cowboys. But I watched the Bears with my dad, and I just remember watching him and them when they first got him not using his mobility, getting him out of the pocket. Their offensive line was bad for many years. It's like, okay, let's move the pocket around. Let's see if this guy can get the offense moving by using his legs. And he does have a great arm. And then you start to see, as the years go by, you're like, okay, maybe it's Cutler. Maybe it's not the coaches calling the wrong plays. Maybe there's something there. And I just wonder if it was a preparation issue. Like, I wonder if he was maybe in film watching and sitting down with the coaching staff, if he wasn't entirely engaged in that part of the game. And I think when you think about the Peyton Mannings and the Tom Brady's and Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Andrew Luck, like Russell Wilson, these are all guys who, yeah, they are extremely talented, as like they have great arms and that type of thing. They have that skill set, but they also put the time in the film room and being able to sit down with their coaches and being able to break down defenses a lot better. And I don't know if Cutler really showed that. I think sometimes he felt like his skill was going to take over and win games over these other guys who were also just as skilled as he is. I think for him, in his mind, maybe he was thinking that he could overcome whatever they were going to throw at him, he didn't have to prepare. He could be able to throw himself, throw out of those situations, or, you know, his arm was strong enough to be able to get him out of these hairy situations that he'd be in. But I think it was relatively disappointing to get the quarterback. You know, they were thinking they were getting a high quality quarterback, and you saw lots of instances where, okay, there's flashes of this great quarterback, but the next week you would see him come back out and he'd throw two or three interceptions the next week. And there was never any consistency to his play. And so I think for me, at least, my memory of Cutler is just inconsistent, and how he was able to get the money that he got from the Bears. It does kind of scratch your head about where the Bears were at and what they've been looking at from the quarterback side of things for so many years, that this was the best that they've had. He basically broke all of the Bears' quarterback records because he's been here the longest, and, you know, there really wasn't much before him from the quarterback position for the Bears. So, yeah, he has all those records, but it was ugly while he was doing it.
Well, yeah, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's still quite possible that Ryan Pace would hold on to Cutler just until he finds a suitable replacement, because at this point, as it's been well talked about, the guaranteed money that Cutler got for his 7-year extension that he signed in 2014 has been paid out. So now he's on what they're calling a pay-as-you-go plan from this point forward. Uh-huh. And for 2017, his deal would pay him $12.5 million. That's a base salary, and that doesn't kick in until after Labor Day.
Okay.
And that also includes a potential for him to earn up to $2.5 million per game in bonuses next season. So, but the Bears can cut Cutler at any point between January and September, and then it would only be a $2 million hit on the salary cap. But like I said, they could keep him around until they can find a plan B and have that firmly in place. And I know that Fox likes Connor Shaw, but I don't think they look at him as a long-term fix. Mm-hmm. Who knows what Matt Barkley can do? And they brought back David Fales to have a backup, so we'll have to see. If I don't know, Cutler's been so lucky at this point. Who you almost don't want to bet against him, and him being gone. But yeah, it's just potential never realized. It seems like to me he's like an artist who likes to make it up as he goes along, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's not like a technician. Like he doesn't do everything. His mechanics, he doesn't execute his mechanics the same way every throw,
right,
every play. You know, he's just sort of out there at sometimes flying by the seat of his pants. Yep. I think that's kind of his makeup. And, you know, that's only going to get you so far.
Well, it was interesting because, like, if you think about it in that aspect of things, you could put him in the same light as, like, a Brett Favre. But Brett Favre was able to get his teams, you know, at least a Super Bowl. And, you know, he a lot of times that's what it seemed like with Brett Favre, was he didn't really know what was going to happen, and he would be just improvising certain parts of the game and throw the ball up, and it would end up landing in a Packer's arms most of the time. And he tore apart the Bears many, many years doing stuff like that. But Cutler, on the other hand, doesn't have that same – I don't know if it's – Brett Favre was just, he had a horseshoe, you know, somewhere that was keeping him really, really lucky or what. But it's there's a very similar mentality of the way that both Cutler and Favre play the quarterback position. But Favre was a little bit more successful. But I also think that he had a more complete team most of those years with the Packers.
That's true. He did. But that's a good comparison, because in my mind, both of them are sort of what you'd call gunslingers in terms of how they quarterback. But the difference is that Brett Favre, first of all, had a big personality that sort of drew people in and inspired people. Mm-hmm. And whereas Cutler is more introverted and You know, he's sort of, it seems like he's kind of a quiet guy, even though he does lead and he does speak. But, you know, Brett Favre is a big personality. But if you look at Brett Favre, he only won one Super Bowl.
Right.
And late in his career, when he's with Minnesota and then even with Green Bay before he left to go to Minnesota, that gunslinger persona didn't really work. I mean, they had a chance to go, Minnesota had a chance to go to the Super Bowl, and the last play of one particular game, he threw an interception, and that took him out of it. And they, so, you know, I think that's the difference between those guys, is their personality. And of course, Brett did have better players around him.
Yep.
When they won the Super Bowl, and you could argue a better coach, but better coaching staff.
Yeah, I agree. Is there anything else that you saw with football this past week, or how about if there isn't anything that you can think of? Is there a game tomorrow that you're looking forward to? You got the Lions and Vikings, Cowboys and Redskins, and then you have the Steelers and Colts as the night game.
Yeah, I always like Dallas and Washington. I always like to see them play. And then, of course, I think Lions and Vikings. Now, for Brad Biggs' Tribune power rankings, he's got the Lions at number 12 and the Vikings at number 13. They're both 6-4. So this should be it'll be a contest for the division lead. So it should be a good game and not a snoozer. So I'm looking forward to that one. And that's the middle game, you said?
The middle game is the Cowboys and Redskins. The first, it always seems to be Lions are the first one up. They always play the 11 o'clock start. And then you have the Cowboys who start about 3 o'clock. And then the 7:30 game will be the Colts and Steelers.
Right. Well, that's a good game to kick off the day with.
Yep. Yeah, I actually, there were so many years that you'd watch the Lions play, and you wouldn't even want to watch the game. So this is actually going to be one where I can see myself watching football all day. I don't have to skip the first game or pay attention to, okay, halftime. Oh, they're already being blown out 28-3. I don't think that's going to be the case tomorrow. So I think that all of the games seem like they should be relatively competitive. I don't think there's going to be a blowout in any one of the three games. They're going to be competitive. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow's football.
I don't know. Andrew Luck is in concussion protocol, so I don't know if he's going to play or not. Both teams are 5-5, so if there is a snoozer, it might be that one.
It could be.
But we'll have to see.
Yep. We'll move right along from football to basketball. We'll touch on the Bulls.
The Bulls. Wow.
They just finished up a game last night against the Denver Nuggets. Which has been a tough place for them to play over in Denver. Mile High, the altitude seems to get to the teams. They have not won in 9 years in Denver, and they've only they basically have lost 14 of the last 15. So it's not very good, and they came close. They only lost by 3, but still it's a loss nonetheless. But this team is looking pretty good. They've seemed to bounce back now that they have kind of, I think, there was those few games where it was bouncing back and forth. Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, who's the number one. And now I think Dwayne Wade's kind of stepped back and let it be Jimmy's team. And then the secondary scorer is Wade, and I think he's finally okay with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Dwayne Wade said in the very beginning it's Jimmy's team.
Yeah.
But last night's game, I mean, The problem was the Bulls were doing fine and seemed to be on their way to victory. I think they had a huge lead.
31-17 at one.
Yeah, and then the second unit came in and stank the place up. Yeah. And, you know, I guess it's going to happen sometimes. But they still had a chance to win the game. And I did see later in the game where I thought there was a call that should have been made where one of the Nuggets charged into Jimmy Butler at half court and they didn't call it. And I don't know if – I don't remember if Denver called a timeout before or at the same time as that happened, but it seems to me that they should have called that. And if they had done that, I think the Bulls would have been victorious. But overall, though, it's been a really good – so far, a really good – road trip, and they have a chance to win the final game, I guess, Friday when they play Philadelphia.
Yep. I've been relatively impressed with the Bulls on this circus trip. It's not normally a trip that goes well for the Bulls, but they have a winning record currently. And yeah, finishing up in Philadelphia on Friday, that's not a bad way to finish. It should be a game that, well, last year they played Philadelphia and it was basically just Butler. That was the one game last year where, like, Butler, I think he had like 48 points or something crazy. He was the only one playing out of any of the starters, so he kind of had to take over the game. So hopefully this will be an end of a road trip where I think they would be 6-3, I want to say, if they end up winning on Friday, which is not bad. That's what you want to do on a long road trip. And did you hear that for both the Blackhawks and the Bulls, this is going to be the last circus trip?
Yeah.
So they're no longer
sure they're happy about
trip.
That. But yeah. Maybe not. I remember hearing the Blackhawks say that they didn't mind the circus trips because it gave them a chance to get out of town and they could come together more as a team and gel. But maybe that's changed. But the Bulls, you know, they've been amazing on this trip. The game that really impressed me was the game against which team was that?
Clippers.
The Lakers.
Oh, Lakers, okay.
Yeah, I thought, well, these guys aren't going to beat the Lakers because it seemed that the Lakers just kept coming with a young athletic guy who could take the ball to the basket and score. And I guess the Lakers at that point just mentally at some point checked out, and the Bulls held tough. And I think that's a difference. The Bulls have that veteran core, and they've been able to instill some veteran values to a lot of the younger players, and they don't give up. They keep grinding and grinding. And even when they were down against Denver, they did come back and to challenge them to win the game. So, you know, it's kind of impressive. And the thing that's shameful about it is the Bulls, they're not getting a lot of conversation nationally. Everybody, you know, they'll talk about the Knicks. They'll talk, of course, about Golden State. They'll talk about just about every other team, but it seems like the Bulls and Charlotte, and they're in, I think, the top five or six teams in the East. They don't get talked about at all.
And I think it's Charlotte is three, and then the Bulls are four. So, yeah, they're in the top four between those two. It's Cleveland, I think it's the Raptors, and then it's Charlotte, and then it's the Bulls. Yeah. So it's pretty good. Starting off and, you know, being 3 weeks in the season, I don't know if anyone thought that the Bulls would be there. I was hoping that they'd be showing something that I wasn't expecting. But I was still expecting probably a 500 team or so, that they were going to have to feel some things out, figure each other out a little bit. And they seem to have kind of come to figuring out. Offense goes through Butler. They actually have had him, I think we touched on this a little bit last week, of like having him playing more of like a point guard position when he's out on the floor, and taking over and just having your best player on your team having the ball in his hand and being able to start the offense that way has been able to open up some shots for Wade. And I think you're seeing a three-point shooting Wade that we haven't seen in quite a few years. Last year, I think he only took 7 3-point shots. So that's kind of crazy to think, or he made 7 3-point shots. I don't remember exactly what the number is, but it ends up being he's shooting at a higher clip and he's being more accurate. And so I think that has a lot to do with Butler freeing up the 3-point opportunities for Wade.
Now, you talked about the Eastern Conference and the rankings, and this is shocking to me. It just echoes what I just said, is that the Bulls have surpassed Toronto.
Okay.
So the Bulls are the fourth team, and Toronto's fifth, and then Charlotte is third. So what that means is if the playoffs started tomorrow, that the Bulls would go up against Indiana, and then Charlotte would have New York, and Atlanta would have Boston. Oh, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. I think the Bulls would have Toronto.
Right, yep.
And then Indiana would have Cleveland, and Atlanta would have New York, and Charlotte would have Boston. Mm-hmm. So That's a tough first round matchup for them.
Right.
To play Toronto, but yep. Who knows? Maybe they can continue to climb.
Yep.
In the conference, and if they do that, if they could get to where they have to play Boston or New York or Indiana, well, I don't know if they'll get to be the number one team, but if they could play Boston or New York, it's a very, I think, winnable first round for them.
Yep.
And what kind of series would that be if they had to play New York?
That would be fun. It definitely would be very interesting to see. And actually, speaking of New York, I saw an article talking about Robin Lopez and Joakim Noah and the contracts. Basically, you traded the two for each other. And the Bulls right now have the better end of the deal, both, like, it seems talent-wise and money-wise. Like, there's a $4 million difference between the two. You have $17 million that Noah's making to $13 million. Well, speaking of the Knicks and New York, I don't know if you saw this or not there, Brian, but Robin Lopez actually, they kind of traded Robin Lopez for Joakim Noah, and we're getting the better end of the deal right now. Mm-hmm. Robin Lopez himself is, he's impressing me quite a bit. But what I like is we're saving $4 million a year. It's $17 million that the Knicks are paying Joakim Noah, and we're paying Robin Lopez $13 million. And even over the next few years, it's going to increase. But we'll still be paying him $4 million less than what the Knicks have to pay Joakim Noah. So that's really nice. We're saving the $4 million and also having the better player. You can't really complain too much about that. And the guy just works hard. He's basically, with Taj, I think the two of them are showing some physicality to this team that I didn't expect us to have. So it's really, really nice to see that there is that toughness coming from Lopez and Taj, because they really need that.
Yeah, I don't know what Phil Jackson was thinking when he let Lopez go and picking up Joakim Noah, mm-hmm. Given the fact that Joakim has had injury history. Mm-hmm. And did you hear the comment that was made by Jerry Reinsdorf when I think he got some sort of award? Maybe it was the Basketball Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. or something like
yeah.
that. And they asked him about that trade, and he said, well, we just felt that Joakim was no longer a frontline player.
Right.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ooh. And, I Joakim, he is still serviceable. I think, they have this new analytics that they follow, and somehow they are able to rate the players to find out if they're at a plus or a minus regarding mm-hmm. their productivity. And Joakim has the highest rating. He was, at least last week when I heard, he was, I think, 108 or 110, plus 108 or plus 110, uh-huh. which was the highest on the Knicks. But he's only been playing maybe 15, 16 minutes a game mm-hmm. Of late since they discovered that they could play Porzingis at the center.
Right.
And get a lot more scoring from the Knicks. But the Knicks are just, what's their record? They're 7-7. They're a 500 team. So mm-hmm. I don't know if it's doing a whole lot for them.
Yeah, I think with, like, Joakim Noah and why the Bulls, I felt like they really wanted to let him go and were okay with letting Joakim Noah go, was because he has been getting injured the last probably 2 or 3 years now, and they haven't been able to rely on him. And I think they were getting a little frustrated with guys who were getting dinged up and banged up. And so I think they wanted guys who have been relatively durable. And if you think about it right now, the guys that they have are relatively durable guys. Like Rondo yeah. doesn't get hurt all that much. Wade, for the most part, takes pretty decent care of his body. Butler's a relatively healthy guy most of the time. And now they have Robin Lopez. So the starting five don't deal with a crazy amount of injuries. And Taj has been pretty healthy through his career too. So I think they were looking for some stability from, having a Derrick Rose who's always injured, having Joakim Noah always injured. And I think it was they wanted to move on from that and not have to have that question mark of, are we going to have our starting five? And even Dunleavy those last couple of years was dealing with injuries as well. So, and they never had, those last 2 years, they had 20 games each year with the starting five being the starting five. So they couldn't really get any type of chemistry. And I think now you're starting to see that, that these guys are holding up at least so far. 3 weeks in, you can't really, you know, let's see what we're at in January when we're getting closer to All-Star break of how these guys are holding up. But right now, it's looking pretty good, and they seem to be resting guys enough to be able to hold it together. And we just need a little bit more from the bench. The bench really struggled, like you said, yesterday. So hopefully they can bounce back on Friday against Philadelphia and gain some confidence. And we need Mirotić to kind of step up while McDermott is recovering from his concussion. And then next week, it looks like we might be getting Michael Carter-Williams back, which will make things even more complicated with the guard situation of what Hoiberg decides to do. And for me, I feel like this is going to be moving into the season a little bit further. We could start to see a couple of these guards getting traded, I think, to maybe bring in another big guy. Because I think that's where we need a little help is, you know, our bigs need some help. And I think we have enough guards that you could trade one or two of those guys and possibly get another big man.
Yeah, and I think I read a quote to you from the newspaper today that said Bobby Portis looked lost.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he's done that. But he plays hard and he brings energy. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like it's clicked for him yet.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. I think they do need a big person, another big guy. If they could bring in a guy who could back up who could be a bridge after Lopez comes out and he starts to rest.
Yep.
I thought that would have been Fabriano, but I guess not, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
but you mentioned chemistry, and it's something I didn't realize how bad the chemistry was with the Bulls last season. And some of the things that I've read and heard that you know, they were very much at odds.
Right.
And that's changed this year. And I think it was Reinsdorf or maybe someone else in Bulls management who said that with Pau Gasol not coming back, they decided to just go ahead and not bring Joakim in to start over.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily rebuild, but it's still kind of strange as to how all of this developed because, you know, they wanted to get younger, but it seems like all this sort of dropped into their lap. And when I say all this, I mean Dwayne Wade, of course.
Right.
But then I read today that Butler gave him a call. He was thinking of going to Denver. What?
Yeah,
and
I know.
He decided to come to Chicago. Mm-hmm. It seems to have turned out. So, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens moving ahead. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, I think it was like Butler and Wade. Butler has even said that the biggest help to him in growing as a player just within this early part of the season has been Wade. That he's a guy that when Wade comes to him and is critiquing certain parts of the game of, hey, you need to be here, not where you were at, being able to help him learn the game in a different way.
Uh-huh.
Butler really didn't have that. Like, the person he possibly could have at one point would have been Luol Deng, but that was a short period of time. And so I think now Wade is being a very, very big supporter of Butler and being able to kind of show him what a professional looks like. Because last year there was a lot of talk, like you said, of chemistry issues where Butler would be completely separated from the rest of the team. He would get ready on his own. He would basically practice on his own. He wouldn't even be he wouldn't even be part of the team. Where now this year it seems like they spent a lot of time over the summer as a team together, where it really, really helps that team to come together early, and it's paying off. And you're seeing this team seem to communicate a heck of a lot better than they did last year. Last year, it seemed like all of them were just thinking about themselves and playing just for number one and not really thinking as a team. And this team is passing the ball better. When they're clicking, that ball is moving really, really well, and then you see certain parts of the game where they forget that and they fall back into the bad habits of trying to go one-on-one against the guy and putting up terrible shots. And so when this team is going up to those 14, 15-point leads, 20-point leads, it's because they're moving the ball and just sharing the ball so well, and they get a lot of assists. And when it looks good when they're doing that. And so hopefully they can start to get out of those bad habits as the season goes on and trust each other a little bit more. And then you'll start to see this team just continuing to click like they are.
Yeah. And I think another thing that I didn't count on, and I didn't see it last year. Well, I saw it a little bit, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. And that was Fred Hoiberg's demeanor. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have talked about him being a college coach coming to the pro ranks. Of course, he played in the pros.
Yeah.
But they tried to sort of push him in the same category as Tim Floyd a number of years ago.
Okay.
But it looks like to me that he has a certain, I don't know how to describe it, is it certainly toughness, mm-hmm. but it's almost like he's got an attitude as to, he's got this fierce toughness to him, and I think the team has taken on that persona. And sometimes you look at his face and you can see the competitive nature mm-hmm. coming through. You know, and you see it in his eyes and his posture on the floor. And when something's going wrong, if he can make changes. And that's something else that I think the Bulls have done well with the coaching staff is, you know, during halftime, they've done a good job, I think, of making changes
yeah.
to get their team to be a lot better and to be successful in the second half.
Yeah, with Hoiberg, I think it's interesting because last year he seemed to be, like, apologetic about, like, being the coach. Like, they went from Thibodeau to him. The players didn't really seem to have his back. It seemed like he really was, I don't know, every time I heard him in an interview, he seemed unsure. Now I hear a guy who's relatively relaxed this year, seems to be confident in the team that he has. It just seems like two different coaches, like, from last year to this year. I don't know if he was a little overwhelmed because it's his first time being a head coach for an NBA team or what last year, or him coming into a situation where he knows that the coach before him was really, you know, a lot of people loved him. And I think that now you see a transition where most of those guys who were a part of the Thibodeau team are gone other than Taj and Butler. So it ends up now you have a team that's a Hoiberg team, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I think that gives him a little bit more confidence, and he seems to now be putting his imprint on what this team can possibly be. And so, yeah, it's very, very interesting to see how he has changed from this first year to the second year. So hopefully he just continues to improve as the years go on.
Yeah, I think he will.
Yeah.
So
anything else in the NBA that you've been noticing or want to touch on?
I don't know. Did we talk about this last week, this phenomenon of players taking nights off?
I think we did. Yeah, I believe we did.
Oh, okay. Well, a week later, I still don't like it, but
yeah, it was. We were talking about it with LeBron and Phil Jackson. That's what we touched on.
Yeah, and then, of course, Dwayne Wade took off the game.
The back-to-back against the Lakers, right?
Right, mm-hmm. And they still won that game. I don't know. I guess all's been said that can be said about that.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it, especially when you have a player who's getting a little bit older, and I think he played a good amount of minutes against the Clippers, so it's like, it's okay. Like, if you would have lost the game, maybe if they would have lost the game, maybe I would have had a little bit of a different thought. But I think you do need to find some games here where if you're on a back-to-back, you don't want to run Wade into the ground. He is going to be one of those main pieces that if you're going to do anything in the playoffs or get to the playoffs, it's going to have a lot to do with Wade. So you need to, if he's feeling something and he needs a day off, you give him that day off. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, yeah, I could see if like an injury or something like that, but
yeah,
you know, there's players like, well, I think they're injured too. I was thinking about John Wall. He's also doing that with the Wizards. And, you know, but I don't know. I just don't like it. But another thing I wanted to bring up is that it seems that because of that, players taking time off, the commissioner has said that they're going to shorten the preseason, start the games and the season earlier.
Okay.
And that way it will reduce the number of back-to-back games. And also this business about playing 4 games in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, you know, that'll that'll take care of the problem a little bit, and you won't see as much of it as you have.
Well, it's interesting. This is the first year that I kind of remember there being this early in the season so many back-to-backs. Like, the Bulls themselves haven't really had any, except for the Clippers and the Lakers, so they've had one. But there's been, I know OKC, they've been one that has had quite a few back-to-backs, and Houston has. Cleveland seemed to have quite a few. So these back-to-backs are going to happen more frequently for the Bulls later on in the season. I personally would rather get them out of the way early. But it ends up being after they play Friday against Philadelphia, then they have 4 days off. And, like, Cleveland's just within, like, they are just finishing up a five-day off. So it's like, do you really need the 4 or 5 day off right there? Like, you could have spaced these out a little bit better and given more of these teams every other day. I think that's a little bit easier on a team than doing so many back-to-backs. And so, I don't know. I think that sometimes the scheduling, when you look at them, you can't help but scratch your head sometimes of, this doesn't make sense. Like, why are there so many back-to-backs when they have a big 4 or 5 day break here? That's basically their all-star break. Like, they are having another all-star break for them if there's 4 or 5 days off right there. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, it's just a little confusing and frustrating, I guess, as a fan.
Yeah, I don't know how they – I guess they come up with a schedule by computer. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be hard to come up with a program that does it perfectly. So you're going to have breaks like that. But I don't know.
But it's interesting that, like, what I've noticed is the Bulls seem to play on nights where there's not a lot of other teams playing. I don't know if you notice this or not, but it seems like they're always the off night where there's only – 4 games playing or 5 games playing, and then you'll have a lot of the other teams playing, you know, in the 11-game set on, it'd be today's Wednesday. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday is their big, like, where they have 10, 11 games, and then you have Tuesday and Thursday, which is their, and I think Sunday, which they only have 4 or 5 games each day. And so I don't know if they're really trying to get people to watch the Bulls or if the Bulls just bring in a lot of ratings, because they do show a lot nationally televised games for the Bulls, which is, you know, I like. I'm a Bulls fan, so that's great. But I've just been kind of surprised that they have been showing the Bulls, because not a lot of people expected them to be competitive. So for them to have as many as there are, that's what's interesting to me.
Yeah, well, I think the acid test will be whether or not they get national television after they start showing NBA games after Christmas.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't think they'll get very many, if any, at all.
Okay, yeah.
But I've kind of noticed that too. And I don't know, is there any kind of theory that you have as to why that is, other than just, it's a big market, so the ratings can...
Well, I think you're seeing it where a lot of the times the games that you're going to see tend to be a little bit of the bigger market, so and teams that are doing well. So you'll see a lot of Cleveland, you see a lot of the Bulls, and then you also see a lot of Golden State. So these are, like, I don't know where the Bulls came from, because they didn't win last year or the year before all that much. So it ends up being something where I think for the Bulls, it's strictly market. But for the Cavs and Golden State, everybody kind of wants to watch, you know, the LeBrons and the Steph Currys and Kevin Durant's. And so the names bring in. So maybe they still feel like Dwayne Wade's name and Butler are names that people really want to watch. Mm-hmm. Because you do also see a good amount of Houston games with, like, James Harden, and then you also have Russell Westbrook. So those are, like, the main teams that I see on a lot of nationally televised games, at least early. I think it's really market-based. They want to be able to get these big markets to hopefully bring in the ratings.
Yeah, I can see that, because I have been wanting to see the Mavericks play and haven't. I think I saw one game by them last week, and... in the entire time since the season began, mm-hmm. and things like that.
But I think they haven't really been showing the Mavericks because, this was scheduled beforehand, but it would be ugly to watch the Mavericks now. They're without Dirk. He's dealing with an Achilles injury. J.J. Barea, who's their starting point guard, hurt. Deron Williams, Aaron Williams, he's hurt. Like most of their starters are hurt. The only guy who's not hurt, who's been playing a lot, is Harrison Barnes. Yeah. So it's like you'd be watching literally.
And that's what I saw.
You would just see Barnes playing. And so when you have that, it would be really, really rough to kind of like keep people interested, which is very interesting because the other night they played. Dallas played San Antonio, and that actually went down to the last seconds of the game where San Antonio finally pulled out the game, and it was at San Antonio. So that would have been a game that I think, like, there is a little bit of a rivalry there that they don't really like each other all that much. That would have been a game that I think should have been nationally televised. But I don't really know the rhyme or reason behind it other than it has to be the big markets because that's what you see a majority of the time on national TV is big markets and teams that have big names playing those big markets. So you'll see like an Anthony Davis going up against LeBron. You wouldn't normally see New Orleans play unless they're playing a Golden State or a Cleveland or something like that.
Yeah, those in the West, the teams I've seen the least, Dallas, and they're 2-11, and then Phoenix, 4-11, and then New Orleans, 5-10. I think I've seen one game featuring each of those teams. And in the East, I haven't seen Brooklyn that much, or Miami, or Milwaukee, or Orlando. Or Detroit. I think I've seen one game each of those teams.
Yeah.
And maybe one of Philadelphia. So, yeah, I guess it's market, and then if you're not winning, then you get no love.
Right, yep. I think also for the Bulls, it's just a storied franchise. I think people want to see this team do well. And I think from the Michael Jordan era, there were so many years there after he left that the Bulls were really, really bad and didn't have a lot of games. So now once like Thibodeau came with Rose and those guys, it re-energized the Chicago market a little bit. And, you know, there are a lot more people who are watching basketball now than they were before the Thibodeau era, basically.
Right.
So I think that's really, they're starting to realize that more of the Chicago market is becoming very popular again. And Chicago always does well. You know, the Blackhawks, they always get really good ratings. The Cubs get really good ratings. So and the Bears are always a team that gets good ratings no matter who they play as well. So it just happens to be that Chicago is a very good market that brings in a good amount of people that want to watch.
Right. Big city.
Yes. We will move on from basketball and the Bulls to... let's go with the Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks.
They are also on their circus trip. It's been a little bit of a struggle for them. Our core guys have struggled, actually. The only guy who's been consistent is Marian Hossa. I think he's got 8 points.
That's surprising, given his age.
Yep, and the rest of the guys. Taze hasn't had a goal or a point in 7 games. Kane has been struggling. Panarin's been struggling. And Coach Q surprised me because he's put Kane on with Taze, and that was something that Coach Q kind of has said that he really didn't want to do. I don't really like that change. I liked the lines the way they were when the season started with Taze, Panic, and Hossa, and then Panarin, Kane, and Anisimov. I liked those top two lines. The positive side of this road trip, so far we've seen the younger kids stepping up a little bit, which is nice. Now we just need the core guys to come on board. And so hopefully them tonight they play the Sharks. Hopefully they'll bounce back from the loss last night. They lost 5-0, which is never a good sign. You know, I really like to see that. So hopefully we see a very motivated team to bounce back tonight.
Yeah. No, I don't like that either when he pairs those two together, except when he does it in the playoffs. I think it has a certain impact that affects the other team, and it gives the Hawks sort of like an energy boost. Mm-hmm. So, but if he's doing it this early in the season, when it comes to the playoffs, it's not going to have the same impact, I feel.
Right. I just don't understand it. The Lions were doing well. Like, why move those guys around? They were doing fine in the lines that they were currently. Taze was scoring, Panic was scoring, and Hossa was scoring. Why move those lines? Like, why switch it up when the lines were already being relatively consistent? That's why I scratch my head at the move. I don't know. Maybe I missed something over a couple games that they weren't performing and he felt like he needed to mix them up. But I thought that, those lines were rolling pretty well. Maybe like I said, that's, I don't know. Maybe question. I was missing something.
Well, we'll have to get him on the phone and ask. But maybe it was because he felt that, was it because the power play wasn't working or the...
I think their power play was getting going. The penalty kill was struggling a little bit. And so I thought the power play was fine. And they normally, Toews and Kane are already on the first power play line. They normally come out as the first line anyway. So you do see Kane and Toews together, but it's only on the power play. So I don't understand exactly what was going on with that. Well, why he decided to make the move that he made.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Crawford, I guess, last night, he was the only one sitting waiting for the press to come. The rest of the team was nowhere to be seen after the shutout. And so he, one of the articles I read was, where was the rest of the team? Why did they need to be asked to come out and talk about the loss, that Crawford was the only one willing to come and talk about how bad the team played and him giving up the 5 goals from the goalie side of things. I don't know. To me, that makes me a little frustrated. Like, if I was the goalie and I'm the only one sitting here answering for the way we played, I don't know. I think that you would expect Toews or Kane to be out there answering some questions about why did you guys play so bad against Edmonton. And not that Edmonton's like a crazy great team. Like, that should be a team that the Blackhawks should be able to beat. But they never were able to get anything started. So what do you think about that? How would you feel if you're like, your team didn't play really well and you're the only guy that's there to answer questions about how you guys just played?
Wow, I didn't know that. I assumed that of all teams and all sports, the players were required, if the press requested a player, mm-hmm. that they had to go and talk to the press.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine they wouldn't request those guys.
Right.
If it continued to happen, it might become a problem. But if it just happened once, especially if, you know, each of those guys had a bad game, mm-hmm. and I could see their body language and how they were reacting. If after the game, you know, they were joking around and having fun and seemed to be not very concerned about the fact that we just had, you know, we just lost, then they just duck out on the press, then that would be a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's something that I can see where they are definitely affected by it and taking it to heart, and, you know, they're trying to play hard and to win, mm-hmm. then, you know, if it happens one time, you know, I'm not going to hold it against him because it can't be fun talking to the press.
Right. And Crawford doesn't really like talking to the press all that much. He's not normally the guy. Like, Kane seems to be a relatively comfortable guy around the press, but Crawford seems to be the one who he would prefer not to. But for him to kind of just go and be the representative for the Blackhawks, he, like, that seemed kind of different for me. I didn't expect that. And so when I read that that's what happened, of him being the only one in the locker room answering questions, I thought that was a bit different.
Yeah, well, maybe they asked him to do that, or maybe he volunteered.
I think he volunteered is what it sounded like from the article. But I still would have expected, you know, another player to be there to help answering some questions.
But the Blackhawks are still in first place with 13 victories.
13-5-2, if I'm correct.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's good. They are still at the top of the Western Conference, which is always nice to see. Hopefully they can keep that up, and you'll start to see more consistency from these core players. As long as that bounces back, this team should, I think, be at the top of the Western Conference, at least first, second, third, somewhere in there. I would be surprised to see them not have some type of home ice, at least in the first round. I expect this team to still perform through the rest of the season, hopefully.
Yeah. And it's strange because you mentioned Marian Hossa. He is got, what, 11 goals in 19 games, so he's among the league leaders. And Anisimov has fallen out, but Kane and Keith are still among the assist leaders.
Okay.
So maybe Anisimov has cooled off.
Yeah. Hopefully them coming back home, hopefully they'll finish up tonight with the San Jose Sharks, and that'll be a starting point for them to bounce back. That's what I'm looking forward to tonight, to see how they bounce back from a 5-0 loss. If they can bounce back with a victory against San Jose, which is a relatively hot team at the moment. I think they've won the last few games, and I think they played New Jersey the other night and blew them out. So it'll be good to see if see the Blackhawks bounce back. That's what I'm expecting tonight. They'll be very motivated. Right. Hopefully they're listening. We'll move on to both the baseball teams, Cubs and White Sox.
Before we do, remember I wanted last week to point out Brian Bickle had been diagnosed with MS.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so for all of us who were down on him because he wasn't playing very well and had to be sent down to the minors, that's the reason for it.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to diagnose it, I guess, soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I guess sometimes you have to be careful when you accuse a player. Because it did seem kind of strange that, you know, he was playing well and then all of a sudden he seems to not be able to do anything well. And it turns out that that was the reason for it, so...
Yeah, I think when they re-signed him, because of how well he did in that last Stanley Cup or the one prior to that, where he, in the playoffs, he had like 5 or 6 goals throughout the playoff run, or maybe it was even more than that. Like, it seemed like he was scoring where it was like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they decided to re-sign him, and they let go of Leddy that year, I want to say. And so I know a lot of people who were really frustrated because they felt like Leddy was someone that we should have kept and let Bickle go, that it was just it was only the playoff run that we saw that really, really steady scoring. And so they thought that they were going to get that re-signing Bickle, that you were going to see that jump into the next season, and you never really saw that come to fruition. I don't know if you heard this or not, but last week I read an article where the Blackhawks are trying to bring back Brendan Saad. There's a possibility that they can figure out a way to bring him back.
Wow. All
right. I don't know how they'd be able to do it, because I know he's getting paid quite a bit by Columbus, so I'm not entirely sure. It could just be, you know, pie in the sky type thing, that somebody is seeing something there that probably won't happen, but it'd be nice if he comes back. I really liked Saad as a player. He always played hard, was a good scorer, and he was a guy on that first line that really worked well with Hossa and Toews. So I'd be fine with if he came back. That would that would be really cool if he did.
I would not be Saad. I'd be happy if he came back.
Well done, sir. I like the play on words. Anything else?
Nope, that's it for the Blackhawk, I think.
Alrighty. We will move on to the Cubs and White Sox. Right now, you're just going to mainly get a lot of trade talk, rumors of where specific players are going to go. So, Brian, have you heard anything?
Well, there was one trade.
Okay.
The Chicago Cubs put David Rollins, who, on waivers, and he was claimed by Texas.
Okay.
So, that's another... one player from the championship team that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I did here has nothing to do with trades or anything like that, but the city of Chicago, a wonderful city of Chicago, is charging the Cubs $388,000 for damages done to Grant Park for the parade and the celebration. And damages include broken fences, and also missing plots of grass. What do people do? Bring cows in and have them graze? And they have to put down new sod. And irrigate and do other things. But the city is charging the Cubs $388,000. That doesn't sound right.
Well, let's put it this way. If it wasn't the Cubs, who would they charge to fix that? It would basically be
it's a park. They should pay for it themselves.
It's a park, so the Grant Park would be part of the city of Chicago, so that would come out of our taxes. So we would be paying for the damages that basically these people did. So
They don't have a budget for upkeep?
I think they probably do to a certain extent, but we don't really know what the damages were specifically. Like, yeah, okay, if it was just normal people walking over it, but if people literally took a knife out and they wanted to say this was this was the rally that I was at, this is the grass from Grant Park from this day, then you have big, huge divots that are harder to fix, and you might need a landscaper to come out and lay that sod back down. And so it ends up being something where, okay, it's either going to fall on the Cubs or it's going to fall on us. And so it does suck. Either way, it's not great to hear that the Cubs have to pay for damages that their fans decided to damage property that's not theirs. But you kind of take that stuff into account when you have these type of rallies. I don't know what the Blackhawks, like what those rallies look like, if there was any damages or anything like that. So I can't compare it to other championship rallies that have happened, if there were that same type of damages, and did they just swallow it, or the Cubs are the only one. It's really, really tough to be able to say that it's only because it's the Cubs, but if we don't have the other information of the other teams that have had these rallies in Grant Park and what they had to pay afterwards.
Well, let me ask this question.
Sure.
Did the Cubs ask for a parade in Grant Park?
Did the people say, give
us a parade in Grant Park? Did they go ahead and say, okay, let's reserve Grant Park, we're going to honor our players? If they did that, then I can understand them paying damages. Right. But if it's the city of Chicago showing their appreciation for a team that won their first World Series in 108 years, and then the turnaround and say, oh, the park got screwed up, you guys owe us $388,000, that just seems wrong to me. I'm sorry.
When you put it that way, I do completely agree with you that it was for the people. That parade was not, you know, the Cubs organization would have probably been fine with not even having to do a parade afterwards. All the players and the staff probably just wanted to go home and take it easy and relax from a long season.
Right.
So, yeah, I can see that. Like,
Now,
it was for the people, so the people should have to pay, I guess.
But I think they've done this before. For some reason, I didn't read the entire article, but it did make reference to other rallies that had been held in Grant Park. For instance, in 2008, when Barack Obama won the presidency, and then I think it talked about some other rallies.
Okay.
But I don't remember exactly if they also were charged money. But if this is the type of, but I do know that they charge Lollapalooza, but that's different because Lollapalooza rents the park out.
Right.
So that's different. But in this instance, then why even if that's going to happen? The only other thing I could think of is if they went to the Cubs and said, okay, we're going to have the parade and we're going to have a rally in the park, and if there's any damages, you guys are liable for it. And if they said, okay, then, all right, fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that happened or not.
Right.
But, you know, that's the city of Chicago.
We don't know both sides of the story. We are only hearing the cost to the Cubs. But, yeah, either way, it is thrown for the people to be able to celebrate with their team what has been accomplished. And so, it has to come from somewhere. So it's either going to be the Cubs or it has to come from us. That's really what it ends up boiling down to. So,
but
there is no other answer other than, you know, if the Grant Park has to pay for it, the other option is then they charge a cover. They charge people to come in to cover those costs that if some, you know, to be able to fix the wear and tear that happens in a rally like that.
They
that
don't would have be the insurance? Other opportunity.
Huh?
There's no insurance?
I don't know how you... Well, they might have some type of insurance, but how much would that cover, you know... What is that coverage consist of? Does it say people being idiots? That, you know, how do you ensure how people will act? Like, I really don't know. I can't answer that question without really, because insurance covers a certain amount of things, but would it cover someone literally just cutting up the field and basically wanting to take home a piece of earth with them from a rally? Like, I don't know.
I don't know either.
But to get back to
baseball,
the players themselves, did you hear that Aroldis Chapman, he actually is wanting to go back to the Yankees? That's a team that he's really hoping that he could go back to. He says that it's a classy organization. They treated him really, really well.
They don't make him pitch three innings.
Yeah, he's wants $100 million, and the Cubs aren't gonna pay him.
Whoa,
that. So,
$100 million.
That's what he's looking for. That's why the Cubs aren't gonna keep him, is because that's what he's asking for, is $100 million. So I don't know for how long, but that's what he wants. Is the bare minimum is that's where he's starting at, is $100 million.
Wow, that's probably one of the only teams he can get that kind of money from.
Yeah, no, that would be willing to maybe.
Wow, $100 million to pitch one inning every day, or every 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, because he wouldn't pitch on the games that they're losing. It would only be the ones that they're, you know, within 2-3 runs of winning that game. So, you know, what is it? Maybe 60 games, 70 games that he would come out in? Maybe more than that? Probably more than that. 80. So, it's a lot of money to only come out and pitch one inning, 3 outs. I don't know. I'd have to try and, like, break that down of how much money it is per out.
whatever it is, it's...
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
Wow. The other one that I heard was they're talking about how no player is untouchable, and people looking in, or teams looking into Schwarber.
Well, sure, they wanted him this season.
Yeah. Do you think the Cubs would be, I hate to say stupid, do you think they'd be stupid enough to trade the guy?
No, I think he's still untouchable. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think that he's even scratched the surface of his ability to hit the ball.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of growth there.
Mm-hmm. And he's just clutch. Like, to have that type of hitting that you know in pressure situations, him literally having the entire season off, coming into a World Series, and being able to hit like he did, I can't even count on one hand how many players are able to do that. Right. Like, he is one in 1 billion people, I guess, maybe, that it could be able to do what was able to do in this World Series. So, and you didn't even see him in the field, and he's a relatively good defensive player as well. So it's like, what he would have been able to do for that team, I wonder how much better they would even be with Schwarber throughout the season. Would they have gotten 110 wins? Would they have had 115 wins? Like,
he probably would have added, I don't know, another... maybe 5 to 10 games or so.
Yeah. So it's something where hearing the rumors of them possibly shopping him around, it's just like every team would want a guy that's that clutch. Like, the only person I can think of in my most recent memory that was that clutch was for the White Sox, and Creedy seemed to be that guy it was close. Because he seemed like 7th, 8th, 9th inning, he would come up and he'd be bringing in a couple runs with a home run or a base hit. He's the only guy that I can think of within recent memory that could come close to what Schwarber did.
Yeah, I think you're right. And not only that, but I think because of Schwarber's personality, you know, he's well-liked, so he inspires the rest of the team, because the games that he did play in the World Series, not only did he get hit, but I think he sort of picked up the spirits of the other guys in the lineup. And they were able to perform, whereas before, you know, they were having a tougher time of it. So, you know, not only is he clutch, but he has a positive effect on the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. You know, in the way he approaches the game and plays the game. So,
yep.
No, I don't think that they would trade him. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, who they would trade him for.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that they could get anyone that would really...
Prospects? I don't think so.
No. He's still relatively young. Actually, he's very young still. And he still has so much upside that we haven't seen yet that's something that's really hard to, like, put a number on or put amount of players, whatever it ends up being. Like, yeah, that's really, really difficult for me to even figure out if they would be, like, if there would be a worth. Like, what would a team have to give you to be worth what he brings to the table currently? Other than that, you know, you still have some of the Dexter Fowler talk of, you know, can the Cubs re-sign him?
Does he want $100
million? I don't know.
Because he turned down 17.2 for 1 year. But I guess I can see where he'd want a multi-year deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for him, most players want at least a 3 to 4 year deal to start off with. So I would imagine that it's something where he's looking for them to pay him for another, you know, few more years. 1 year is a little rough. I think you see that with players who are known to having history issues of, like, behavioral issues. You see that with Cespedes. He's basically a guy who just continues to get, like, year contracts because he's a guy who in his career has had issues getting into, like, second, third year with the team. His interest falls apart and he doesn't perform as well as he does earlier with the team. So I don't really see that with Dexter Fowler. I think that he's a guy who seems to be performing these last 2 years. I think he deserves, you know, a longer contract. I don't know what the amount of money, but I think you do have to consider keeping him around for, you know, at least 3-4 years, however long they have, like, locked up for their main core guys. You got to look at that as well. I don't know if he's one of the core guys. I know you want to keep Rizzo. You need to probably keep Bryant. You know, your Lester's, he's signed up for quite a while, and probably Hendricks. I don't know. Who do you think are, like, would be core? Do you think Dexter Fowler falls under the core of that team that you need to keep him? Or is he a guy that you think you can find somebody to replace him? Say,
No, leadoff hitters are precious, and I think, yeah, he should be considered a core guy. But the Cubs have options in that, in the leadoff position if they don't re-sign him. They were talking about Schwarber, I think, or, mm-hmm. you know.
Or what's the name of the kid that made that really good play in the last game of the, the tag up to get him to third base?
Oh, right.
I'm trying to blank on his name.
Almora?
I think he was another one that they were thinking.
Yeah, maybe so, that's, and they would have Schwarber bat second. That's what I'm,
yep.
That's what I remember, yeah, not first.
Do you think even like an Adam Eaton type, do you think the Cubs would try and go, because I've heard that Adam Eaton is a possible person that they would be considering to trade. Do you think Adam Eaton would be a Dexter Fowler? He's a good defensive outfielder.
No.
Okay. But I think you're right. I think on their team they do have, you know, Schwarber. I think they have the depth to be able to let Dexter Fowler go. So I think they can use that as a bargaining chip, but more than likely that means that Dexter Fowler is going to go elsewhere probably.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to see him go because it just sort of fits. It's kind of like Scott Pesednik back
right.
with the White Sox in 2005. But, but hopefully they can work something out. But I don't know what their cap situation is.
Right. As of last week, same thing with the Sox. You still have a Sale talk. Adam Eaton is possibly, Blue Jays are interested in him. LA has actually been popping up other than Atlanta in the Chris Sale talk or actually a trade. What I heard was LA would be interested in Todd Frazier. Robertson and somebody else that I'm drawing a blank on who the third person was, but then we would get like four or five of their top prospects for those guys.
Well, my thinking is, and you mentioned Joe Creedy, Todd Frazier is the best third baseman they've had since Joe Creedy.
Yep.
So why would you get rid of him now?
I don't see that as a realistic thing. I think this is just Fox Sports was putting this up as like who would line up with what the Sox have if they were willing to trade these guys compared to the team that are looking for these guys and the prospects that they have that the Sox would be willing. So I don't think Todd Frazier is the only one that I really haven't heard them say that they would be considering trading. Like Quintana is one that's safe. I haven't heard anything about Abreu and Frazier. Those are like the main guys I really haven't heard anything about. Adam Eaton and Sale are the two guys that have been the most talked about that I've seen in a lot of the articles I read about trades or signings or any of that type of thing.
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to get rid of Sale, but I kind of get the feeling that there's been some there's too much bad blood between he and management.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily just a question of being able to get prospects for him, but I kind of get the impression that that can't be fixed.
Yeah.
The rift that's between, you know, and that's coming from both sides.
Right.
So, you know, I hate to see him go, but I don't think he could ever fully reach his potential with the White Sox.
Yeah, especially if they're planning, like if they honestly are planning on rebuilding, he needs to go elsewhere. Like, because you're wasting his career as a Sox to basically rebuild. Because by the time his career, because he's what, 27, 28 currently?
Yeah.
So say 3-4 years it takes them to rebuild and possibly being in the playoffs, you know, very rarely do you see a Cubs type rebuild. Like even them, they took 5 years. So if you say 5 years, he'll be 33. He'll already be out of his prime. How much left does he have in him at that time? How the velocity he throws at, the way he throws, will he hold up for 5 more years? Those are all like things that you have to be concerned about. So it ends up being something like, okay, if we're going to rebuild, he has to be a piece that you use to rebuild yourself back up.
And he should want to go for that reason.
Yep. And he wants a championship. And he's not playing for the money. Like, if he wanted the money, his last contract, he could have asked for a lot, and the Sox probably would have paid him. But he went with a friendly deal to try and build up a team that could run for a championship, and that hasn't worked out. And so wherever he goes next, I think he needs to make for himself, he probably needs a bigger deal than what the Sox were willing to offer him.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate to have a pitcher like that and then just have to let him go, kind of like Greg Maddux. Cubs let Greg Maddux get away. But he shouldn't go to the Blue Jays. Boo.
I haven't heard Sale for the Blue Jays. It's basically, it's the Marlins are the main one, the Nationals.
The Nationals, I can see that.
Yeah.
Dodgers, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Those that would be his top teams. Maybe even, I don't know if he wants to go to the American League, but Texas?
I've heard a little bit about Texas and Boston for the American League. Those are the two teams that basically on the American League side, and then like I said, the Nationals, the Braves and the Dodgers are pretty much the three teams in the National League that seem to be the most in the market and have the pieces to at least sit down with the White Sox about Sale.
I wouldn't go to the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
If I were Chris Sale. It's like, you guys aren't close enough yet.
Right. Yeah, they need a few other things before I think for Sale to go to the Braves, he would need to see them buying up a lot of guys who are on the free agent market, seeing them building up something really quickly like that they want to win now. But I think the Braves are trying to rebuild from the ground up type of thing. So I don't think they're a team that's just going to go, okay, we got Sale, we need to be able to go out and buy a big bat, maybe it's a big name outfielder, whatever it ends up being, big bullpen guy, something to build around Sale to make him confident. I don't think the Braves are willing to do that.
Well, yeah, but and also, you know, given his age and his desire to win championship, you have to look at who is even close to being able to beat the Cubs.
Right.
And those really, the Dodgers and Washington, are two teams that you could say, in the right situation and with a little luck, could do it.
Yeah, Dodgers, Washington, Giants, I guess, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a team he could look at going to the Giants because they already have two studs.
Yeah.
And then he would be the third. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would make things very, very difficult on any teams that play the Giants because they already play you really, really hard anyway. So you get them a third starting pitcher, and the only other piece they would really need is a bullpen guy.
Or
their bullpen isn't very strong.
And then this obviously wouldn't happen, but the Cubs.
That would be crazy. Like, there would be no way that anyone would be able to beat the Cubs if they ended up having Arrieta, Lester, Hendricks, Sale, and then Lackey. Like, that would be insane. Like, that would be the most dominant pitching staff that I could think of in most, like, I can't think of any other that would have five strong starters like that.
Yeah.
You literally wouldn't have to have only three starters in the playoffs. You literally could, in a five-game, seven-game series, you could go all five starters. Like, you wouldn't have to worry about pitching a guy on short rest. You would be fine. But I don't think the Sox would be willing to do that because they're needing to get that bullpen pitching first.
Yeah, and they'd probably want too much from the Cubs.
Yeah.
But the Cubs do have prospects in the minor leagues.
That's very true.
And they've done well so far in choosing prospects, judging by the current team. So.
And they've already taken one of their coaches, so, you know. The Sox are just going to become the new Cubs and.
Well, it seems like that's what they're trying to do. They got his, well, we couldn't get Joe Maddon, so we'll get the next best guy.
Yeah. We'll take the Cubs leftovers. That's probably better than what most teams have, so.
Yeah, we don't have to actually make any decisions. We'll just watch what Epstein does and take his cast offs.
Oh, man. That's where the Sox have gone, basically, is they need to wait for the Cubs to let go of guys and pick up the leftovers. Anything else in baseball? Any guys that you've been really, paying attention to? Anything that's stuck out?
Yeah, and I have to admit that I'm kind of paying attention to it now because I kind of didn't when Ryan Sandberg was. I mean, I watched and observed Ryan Sandberg play and have the career that he had, but
yeah.
It's scary. How good can Chris Bryant be? Rookie of the year, he follows that up with MVP.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? He always has already has a World Series. Is he gonna get bored? how good can he be?
I kind of like, if you think about it, I kind of compare him to, in another sport, the only thing I can think of is like Jonathan Toews. He's won world, he's gone and won a few Olympics already. The hockey tournament that they just had, the World Hockey Classic, won that. He's won Stanley Cups. Like, he's the only guy I can kind of compare that to.
Yeah, and they seem to have a similar demeanor, similar personality, I think.
Yeah, so I think it's I think right now he's still okay. I would say if they start like winning World Series, like if they win next year, and wins another award, then I think you might start to see a little bit of like Big Head come along and him getting a little bit too big for his britches. But I think right now he's still relatively young and excited about where he's at and what he's doing. I think that excitement will continue for at least another year, if not longer. He seems like he's very motivated to be known as one of the best players that have ever played baseball.
Well, yeah, they're already talking Hall of Fame. They're already saying he's a Hall of Famer.
So that's kind of, I guess, but it's only been 2 years, basically. The kid's been in the league. So wait until he puts a few more together. Right now, he's starting off his career to definitely be a Hall of Famer, but you got to put a career together first. Two years is, it's a good start.
Anything else there, Brian? Nope.
All right. Well, you have a good Thanksgiving, my friend.
You too.
I will do my best, and I hopefully will be out of my food coma for the next time we meet. I look forward to chatting more sports with you in a couple weeks. You have a good long vacation.
Oh, definitely.
Enjoy the extra sleep. We will see you next time, everybody. This is the No Look Pass. I'm Brett Shishkoff.
And I'm Brian Hawkins.
Until next time, enjoy that food and football tomorrow.